We were told
these cuts are not smart, they are not fair, they will hurt our economy, they will add hundreds of thousands of Americans to the unemployment rolls.
That bad stuff was going to happen.
My God.
Game over, man. Game over.
No, no, no. More than that. That things were going to just unravel. We were told that this week would feel like the end of the world.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
But we're still here. Now, don't get me wrong. Bad stuff is happening in communities all over America and in many families right down the block as the sequester.
You keep using the word.
My God, how I hate that word. The sequester, with its $85 billion in budget cuts, takes hold this week. But the markets are shrugging the whole thing off. The dollar is fine. Question.
Hey, what happened?
Hard to say.
What just happened? That's the question this week. A series of conversations on The Takeaway. What just happened with this sequester in the economy and the political system? First up, Lawrence J. White, professor of economics at the NYU Stern School of Business. He joins us in the studio today. Welcome, professor.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, what did just happen? Is this a failure of sovereignty in America? The markets really are taking a ho-hum attitude to the whole thing. And, you know, the numbers don't quite add up in terms of the pain that we were told about.
Well, the markets have – whatever effect there's going to be, they've long ago anticipated. So the fact that there isn't any immediate reaction is not surprising. The sequester, as you just heard, not good policy. Let me be stronger. Dumb. It's nuts. But it's not cataclysmic. It's not going to cause grass to grow in the streets. It's just the wrong solution for a medium to long run problem. But this is not the right solution. And even if you wanted to cut spending now, this is a meat axe approach. What you would want is a more surgical approach.
Let's do some of the numbers here and then talk about sovereignty in a moment. When the stimulus package was proposed and then passed right in 2008 as Obama, 2009 as Obama was taking office, really as he was being inaugurated, they were talking in terms of hundreds of billions of dollars going into the economy. Now, that may have prevented a wider recession. But again, the impacts of that were not visceral. It's not like anybody remembers where they were when the stimulus package was passed. Why would we expect an $85 billion, an order of magnitude less, of cuts to have any kind of measurable effect?
Well, $85 billion does represent about one half of 1% of GDP. We're at a point in our sort of economic path where we still have a weak economy. Unemployment is at 7.9%. Most people think that somewhere in the low sixes, maybe in the fives, would be much better. And so this is just not a good time to have this kind of sharp and, again, meat axe cut in spending. But it's not cataclysmic. It's just a bad time to be doing this bad thing.
I just feel like I've been sold a bill of goods once again by the folks down in Washington. I mean, you were in the Carter administration, right?
That's right. I was in the Council of Economic Advisors, senior staff.
And I remember some scary comparisons between Obama in the first term and Jimmy Carter, not wanting to turn out like Jimmy Carter. But here we are in the second term. And you suspect that what's going on is actually a worse scenario than what you endured back in the Carter administration.
Well, you know, I remember very clearly a lot of talk at the time of dysfunction, and this with a Democratic president having a Democratic Congress, both the House and Senate, but still a lot of conflict, a lot of difficulty in agreement. And there was a lot of talk, maybe we need a constitutional amendment to allow more things to happen. And then Mr. Reagan got elected. He had a vision. He was able to articulate the vision. He was able to reach across the aisle, Tip O'Neill, the Speaker of the House at the time, and he were able to come to some kind of understanding.
So why did divided government work back then, but it doesn't work today?
Well, you know, things have just become more polarized. I'm not, you know, I think new media, new technology, new communication has probably exacerbated. But There just doesn't seem to be that ability to be able to reach across the aisle. Take, for example, the compromise that was reached just after New Year's, where we averted another sharp problem, and the Republicans agreed to very modest tax increases on very rich people, but they agreed to it. Now, one approach on the D side would have been to commend the Republicans on being such statesmen and this can pave the way for more agreement. But instead, what did you see within less than 24 hours? Sniping. Oh, aha, they've agreed to tax increases. Now that means what? It was just the pattern is one of gotcha, of sniping, not of reach across the aisle and try to move together.
Is that because they're aware that the stakes are low, that it's not really going to be a cataclysm, that essentially they would rather play these political games because they really understand that $85 billion is small potatoes, and the government sort of runs itself with the automatic borrowing, the automatic financing, as long as the debt ceiling is raised? Things just sort of go on. They can continue to have these arguments.
Well, I think that is part of it, that right, the stakes are not huge, although at the individual level there can be a lot of hardship.
Just exactly.
And, you know, we'll start to see longer lines to get passports to appear in the summer at national parks. There may be longer lines at airport security. But also I think there's a longer run view that everybody's thinking about the next election and, you know, trying to build up positions now for the next election. And
that just means government shutdown. I mean, that just means that we have basically inaugurated, enshrined a system that is constantly in campaign mode and that can never make a decision.
Unfortunately, I mean, I normally like people to be thinking about the long run, but in this instance, I think it is leading, unfortunately, to dysfunction rather than to better planning.
Just one positive here, fewer IRS audits as a result of the sequester?
That's personal pain that I personally would like to prevent. But there's a role for audits to keep people honest, to make sure that everybody is paying his or her
property. We're all in agreement. But just to pin you down, there probably will be fewer audits.
There probably will be, yep.
Lawrence J. White, professor of economics at NYU's Stern School of Business, on what just happened, the sequester, your views at 877-8-MY-TAKE, or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. Thanks, professor.
Thank you.